You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, what's going on out there? Thank you for tuning in wherever you are, from wherever you are out there on the globe. Welcome to the show again. We're in the LA Talk Radio live format. I'm so happy to be here with everyone today. So how are you doing out there? I know things are hectic. Everybody's stressed to the max. I can tell by the way people are driving. So stressed out there. But you know what? I'm here to tell you, take a deep breath, practice some calm and release, relax, and let go and have some fun with me. I'm going to try to make your day a little bit brighter. Today, our guest, and you know I like to bring it live and as real as it can get. We have critically acclaimed A Noise Within Productions, a gem of the ocean, Radio Golf, Seven Guitars, and King Headley 2. Director Greg T. Daniel, that's Greg with a double G in case you're out there trying to look it up on, you know, on Google so you get it right away. He's going to talk to us about his reboot and latest adaptation of the August Wilson's Piano Lessons that is running here at Noise Within Productions in Pasadena. So just to give you a little recap in case you don't know and you haven't heard about it yet, we're going to encourage you to go see it. But it's based around, kind of wraps around the lives of an African-American family, the brother and sister. If you hear a dog, I have a dog in the background, so I'm sorry. The brother and sister, Bernice, who's played by, I believe her name is
Nadia Okoro.
And then the boy, Willie, who's played by Kai Ely. And we're going to talk to director Greg T. Daniel about it, and we're going to get right into it. Hey, Greg.
Hey. Good afternoon, Osiris. Hey.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So we're going to get right into some questions. So why the piano? Why not the saxophone, the drums? Why a piano, and why the big controversy that music seems to bring when there's a family gathering of this sort?
Well, part one is because you'll see within the scope of the story, the piano carvings have happened on the piano to alter it. It's a beautiful metaphor that August Wilson. It was bought during enslavement, and one of their ancestors began carving the entire family tree, as well as marriages, deaths, moving, carved it into the piano. So it is this not only a valued family heirloom, but it's also a history of, in this case, the Charles family, because it's a representation in wood on the piano of all the grandfathers, grandmothers, aunts, uncles that were present at that time. So it is an heirloom, but it's a very precious heirloom that represents more than just a piano. It probably represents the Charles family when they were enslaved. So that's why it takes some importance.
Yeah, and the thing is that why in our culture in particular, music and food seem to be a big thing stemming from Africa into America, et cetera. So with the engraving of these, the grandfather who was enslaved, right, with that engravings, how spiritually do you think that is specific to Black culture in terms of, you know, what does it bring about spiritually, and how can culturally we apply it to modern day society?
Wilson always believed in most of his stories, he mixes Western, let's say, theology with African mysticism. He truly believes that one has to reach back into the past with all his pain in order to embrace it and move on into the future. So he always mixes. There are a number of the plays of the 10 play cycle. There's a number of plays which borders on and dips into African mysticism.
Right.
And that's what makes this piano special, because you'll see in the course of hopefully those who will attend how African mysticism is woven into the thread of this piano. And again, all art tends to lean toward music anyway. Those same values and that music possess, all art tends to lean toward that. So the gathering around people around the piano is culturally And for most cultures, gathering around to sing, to share stories, to raise their voices, there's something very healing about it. There's something very present about it. There's something really wonderful about raising your voice in song as you offer it to other individuals. And that's part of what happens in the piano lesson with this piano.
So as we expand into the future, as people less and less, or in some cases more and more, tend to want to know about more about their history and their culture and where we come from and what we're doing here and how we got here. The engravings on the piano in particular, that was put there by somebody's spirit. You know, somebody actually took the time out, like I'm an artist, so I know what it feels like to have to imprint something. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that those imprints, that engraving, do you think that the two people involved, which happened to be Boy Willie and Bernice, where one values the history of the piano and the engravings and the whole spiritual essence of it, and the other one doesn't care because it's modern day, look, we can sell it, get some money, you know how things go when people get in desperate needs as time goes on. How do we retain that? How does the play enable us to retain that history, but still move forward into the future at the same time?
I think Boy Willie, by the end of the play, understands the importance of the piano. He loves the piano. It's just that he sees it as a conduit to sell it and buy the land, the very land that their relatives were enslaved on. He sees it as a tool that is his inheritance, that he can use it to do that, where Bernice wants to keep it more or less as an heirloom. By the end of the play, I think both Bernice and Boy Willie come to understand the importance of the piano and its rightful place into their family. She's liberated because for all the time it's been there, she's never touched it. She's never played it. She just keeps it there. And of course, he wants to use it. So I think the beautiful thing about the story, they come to understand each other's point of view by the end. And by the end, Boy Willie isn't looking to take the piano anymore. He's grown by the end as well and understands its importance in this family, as well as Bernice understands that it should be played, it should be taught, it should be, because she never mentions the history of the piano to her daughter who lives with her. So by the end of the play, they each come do like a 360 and see each other's point.
Mm-hmm. Which is the way we want things to happen within a family. We want people to come to some kind of harmonious or, you know, agreement, amicable agreement.
Absolutely. And the play really is about legacy. I mean, what happens when you inherit this legacy that's painful, that's wrought with pain, but how do you reconcile yourself with it? To Bernice is keep it as is, to Boy Willie use it to get some land. So how does one reconcile oneself to a legacy that might be a little painful, that you would rather forget? But again, August Wilson is always a playwright that said, you have to reach back into the past with all its pain, with all its infamy, in order to understand who you are and move forward into the future.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, it mentions that it is a 10 American cycle.
Yes.
What does that mean? Explain to people what that means that don't know theater. Sure.
August Wilson, a celebrated Black playwright, wrote a play for every decade of the 20th century.
Wow.
So it's a 10-play cycle that begins with Gem of the Ocean and ends with a play called Radio Golf. But our piano lesson takes place in 1936. That's so how right. audacious of him that he wrote a play for every decade of the 20th century and it ends with Radio Golf. There's 1911, 1936. I believe there's one in the 1990s. So that's the 10-play cycle. It's usually called the century cycle. That's sort of the nickname for it. But what he did was write a play, 10 plays. And then he expired at 60 years old when he finished the last one. We did lose him to cancer. We lost him, I believe, to liver cancer. But he had completed his 10-play cycle that's there for us to experience, to witness. And it was just an amazing, tremendous accomplishment by this American playwright to write a play for every decade about African-Americans in every decade. And all 9 plays take place in the Hill District of Pittsburgh. The only one, Ma Rainey Black Bottom, takes place in Chicago. But all the other 9 plays take place in Pittsburgh. Yes, yes.
Well, how clever of him. And I might add to the audience out there, in case you don't know, I mean, our audience is very diverse. So we have people that are 15, you know, we have people that are 85, you know, we have all kinds of people watching. So and for the kids out there that may not know this, You know, these plays were written way ahead of their time. This guy is a Pulitzer Prize winner. So it's not just, you know, anybody, you know, twice.
Fences and the Piano Lesson won the Pulitzer Prize for August.
That's
Wilson.
Right.
He's
That's
a two-time right. Pulitzer Prize.
He's a two-time Pulitzer Prize winner. So you want to be, you know, you want to be aware, especially if you're someone thinking about getting to acting, playwriting, directing, anything that you have to, you know, draw from experience and things like that. You want to definitely look up August Wilson. You want to definitely definitely come and see Piano Lessons directed by Greg right now. But another question now, what lessons do you feel as a director can be learned that we, because there had to be a reason that you chose to do Piano Lessons. You chose this. It's not, you know, there had to be the reason. What lessons do you feel that can be learned from someone watching doing the play from understanding something? Because each time, in my opinion, that this is done, August Wilson, it's another layer of the depth of his soul that I feel, that I can feel personally. It's another layer we're uncovering of how deep this man was, that he was able to write these things ahead of time without knowing ahead of time what would be happening.
That's
so
right.
What do you feel are some of the lessons that we can take from his experience?
Well, I think there's something in Piano Lesson about family, again, and I'll go back to what I said earlier about legacy, about valuing one's legacy no matter what it is. I mean, so many times my father, who was from the Caribbean, I mean, he never spoke to me about the Caribbean. He just thought it was better off. Now that we're in America, let's not talk about the Caribbean. And as I became an adult, I began to find out all these rich and wonderful stories about him growing up there and what it was like. But so many folks came over as immigrants and just didn't share their stories. But there's a wealth of information about who we are and who you are. If you could go back and find out, what is your legacy? When did your parents get here? Your grandparents get here? Who do they marry? Well, who are your relatives? So there's a lot about, in many ways, it's a family drama in that it teaches you to sort of value, at least be aware of what your roots are. Where do they come from? Where do they hail? Because it makes you a whole person. You may even find out some of the decisions you make unconsciously are based on the exposure you had generationally, the exposure you had to some of these stories. So there's definitely a lesson in being able to share. And I've had many audience members who were African-American who came up to me afterwards and said, oh, that was my uncle. Oh, that was my aunt. Oh, that was my grandmother. They see within this family, it happens to be racially specific, but they see within their family echoes of their own family.
Echoes That's right.
The struggles that happened to their family, the triumphs that happened to their family. So it's nice that people come together in a way to understand this shared human condition. I mean, we all share the human condition. And
that it transcends culture. It transcends It transcends that.
And that's why our audiences are so mixed, because they find within their own family likenesses and resonance for themselves.
That everyone can relate to a lesson. Right. And not only that, I might add that not only can everyone relate to it, it's around music. It's around music, which is something that, you know, we don't, you know, how many people do you know that are in their homes playing a piano anymore? Mm. How many people know are in their homes, actually in their backyard, working it out, beating on a stick, beating on a bottle? It's all like so electronicized. So in my opinion, it's really important to understand how it's important to take time out of your busy life schedule and get together as a family, whether it's two people, three people, four people, and do some piano lessons, do some gathering, you know, do some things that do more than talk about TV and the latest Hollywood gossip and everything. I would hope that those things are kind of staying with us. So
yeah, share stories. Sharing stories is one of the things that bond family and family members. Sharing our stories, sharing our days. And you're right, in regards, because we live in such a high-pressured, high-paced society, we don't usually take the time to do that. But when we share our stories, when we share our struggles, there's a likeness, there's a resonance for all of us. It's a great way to heal, a great way to share and bond. It's a great way to employ empathy. Maybe in hearing my story, or again, audience hearing this story, they empathize with this family and who these people are.
Now, you're going to tackle all the rest of the
theater. The theater has decided, after we did the first one, that they would commit themselves to producing all 10 plays. Piano Lesson represents number 5. So we're five plays into the cycle. But right now, this theater, Noise Within, and I got to give them credit for it because they're not a huge theater. They're not like the Monterey Perform or the Pasadena Play. I mean, they're not a huge theater, maybe 300-seat theaters, 350 seats. Definitely. But they're committed to doing all 10 plays. So this is our fifth, and we look forward to getting through the entire cycle. I'm so blessed that I get to, at this point, if they keep me on, that I'm doing August Wilson's entire century cycle.
Well, like I said, I didn't. I am not, I don't know anything about the theater other than going to the theater as a participant, but in the language of the theater, everybody needs to know what these things mean, why it's a cycle, why does a run go from a specific time to a specific time? Yes. Why is it only running from, it started October 19, it's going to run to November 10. So when it ends that run, what happens to the play? Where else do they go? Do they stay here? Do they throw that one away, pick up the other one immediately? Do they change actors? Do they change, want to know those kind of things. I want you to tell these people out here what happens to you, the cast, and everyone else when the play is done, or when you've done 2 weeks in and maybe something happened or whatever, you have to change characters, you have to rewrite. What happens? We want to know the process.
Well, this theater company has a five-play season. So what happens after this when they're already prepping for their next play? That's why the dates are so hard. As the next one is coming up. So they opened with Skin of Our Teeth, I believe, by Thornton Wilder. We're the second one. Christmas Carol is next. They're doing Macbeth in January. So they publish to their subscribers, people who pay to see the entire season. They have specific dates that these plays are going to be running at the Noise Within Theater. So that doesn't mean anyone else in other country, the United States might be doing it, but we have a specific time frame. And then, of course, they break down the set. And, of course, the next one will come up, the next play. So it's not like they can go, okay, so we're just going to keep piano running till March. They can't do that, unfortunately, because, again, they have five plays they've committed to mounting and producing within their season. That's the kind of theater that's the kind of theater they are. And people buy the subscriptions to see the plays. They buy subscriptions to see all five plays.
What do you and the cast? What's the interaction between you and the cast?
After the show opens, I'm kind of redundant. After the show opens, I'm not really needed. I come to see it, of course, and I'll maybe offer suggestions. But after the play opens, we opened on October 19th, like a Saturday, a week ago, I'm really no longer needed. The director only works up until the play is now.
No one would know that unless because a lot of times when you hear director, at least for me, I don't know about you. I'm not trying to be smarter than anybody. I'm going to tell you that I don't know. Sure. A lot of time I know what a film director is. I know what that kind of director is, a director on a set, things like that. But I don't know enough about theater to know the difference between the direction that goes on a live theater and the direction that goes on a set that is going to be transferred into film. What happens there?
Again, as a stage director, I'm done. I'm done by opening night. Now, I might be invited back because they need something else, but that play often has a life of its own. It's like, okay, it's yours now, actors. It's been directed, it's been designed, it's yours now. So the actors take it and they keep going. They make it their own.
Okay.
That's it. We're done. I am done. And of course, the actors will continue. And when there's another August Wilson play, of course, I'll see those actors again. They're going to audition for the next one, whatever it's going to be. I don't think we've decided yet. But the next August Wilson play, those actors we've worked with before, they come in to audition because they may not all be right there. I might need someone younger, older, or bigger, smaller. So they'll come in and audition again. But with each play, we're building sort of an audience. We're so well attended now when we do a Wilson play because we've done, now this is our fifth. So audiences come to recognize, that's the company that does all these Wilson plays and they do it really well. Let's go when they do the next one. We want to go see it when they do the next one. So hope the next one will be their next season, which means they'll choose five more plays. Hopefully one of them will be an August Wilson play. And they'll start selling tickets and a subscription to those five plays in the next season, which will probably start about September of 2024 would be the beginning of the new season.
You mean 2025? 2025?
Yes, I'm sorry, 2025.
That would be the
That would be the beginning of the next season. That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
2025. And then when the season starts, it runs, what, a month, 2 months, 3 months? How long?
Their plays run about 4 to 5 weeks. And as I say, they have to take them down. Because now, they might bring something back. There's a possibility of bringing something back if they have the space, but they got to get in line in the next play. They've been doing Christmas Carol for years. It's a real audience favorite. So they're gearing up right now to do Christmas Carol, and they're going to be doing Macbeth in 2025. So they're beginning auditions.
What makes everybody want to do August Wilson play? What makes everybody?
He's one of the master playwrights of the 21st century. I mean, he's one of the master playwrights of the 21st century. Not only the accolades that he's won, but his stories touch hearts so much. I mean, we have a number of master playwrights. His stories never get tired. They never get old. In any time in the United States, this is a statistic that comes out in American Theater Magazine. Anywhere in the United States, there's an August Wilson production going on somewhere. One of the most produced plays across America. Involves one or more of the plays, August Wilson 10-play cycle going on somewhere. So it's not just Los Angeles or California, but his plays are produced all across the United States because he is a master playwright. And if you invest in hearing him, you'll know. He was a poet before he was a playwright. So in his playwriting,
you can feel that. Yeah, you can feel that. You can feel the poetry, the way he writes, the way that flows. How he writes, it's like a dance almost.
Some of his lines are so beautiful. They're pure poetry. And he was a poet before he became a playwright. So many of his situations, a character will say something, oh my God, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful line. Let's listen to that line. So I think that helped feed his ability to write characters, the fact that he was in love with poetry.
Now, this is 1936. This man is alive and living and writing and being. How was he able to get around racism and things that were obstacles and blocks in order to write something that is now?
Well, he wrote about 1936. He wasn't in 1936. He wrote about
1936. So,
yes. In 1911.
How was he able to go back in time into that time period, bring it up, write it, and then make it, you know, where people can still relate to it? So obviously some of those things may be still going on, or maybe we need to be, what do you think?
I think it's talent, imagination. I mean, playwrights and directors and actors, they're famous for when you do a period piece, meaning something not contemporary, other than research, because you have to find out what was the time like socioeconomically, racially, et cetera. But just the imagination to say, I'm going to set this play in 1936 because I think it works well.
That's the story I'm trying to tell.
So he just had this innate talent of feeling this period. What can we do with this period of time? So he chose Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I think that's 1911-ish, 1911. So he just was that kind of, again, the master playwright, and I mean that literally. He sampled, what can I say during this time period? Why do I want to? Because all of his plays could have been contemporary. He could have just set him in a contemporary time. But no, he thought there was a richness, particularly for African-Americans. He wanted to see our growth from that time period to 1980s, 1990s at the last play. So he specifically wanted to see how did African-American people grow in the United States? What were our challenges? What were our obstacles? What were our conflicts? What were our triumphs? Let's see how that developed over this entire century. So that attracted him. It got his imagination. That's his imagination.
That's right. He did. What would you say to someone aspiring to be an August Wilson? We don't have. I haven't heard. Maybe you guys tell me out there if you've heard of anyone aspiring to be an August Wilson. I'm trying to find
a playwright.
They're aspiring to be an August Wilson. What would you say to them? Maybe they don't have what he had to draw on. Maybe they don't have that deep, enriching thing that we were going through at that time that drove us to survive and drove us to stick together. We don't have a lot of that now to drive us to stick together.
We have our own obstacles and problems. I would say two things. A, write from what you know. Start with yourself. Start with your family. Start with your neighborhood. Start with your community. What do you want to say about your neighborhood? What is the compelling story you have that you would like to speak about in your family or yourself, your own struggles? Always start with what you know. That's the first lesson. And two, There are so many writing programs now across America. It wasn't when I was coming up, but so many colleges now have formal writing programs in playwriting. You could get an MFA degree, a Master of Fine Arts degree in playwriting. And some very fine contemporary playwrights are teaching it. So if you want to go formally, you could get into a writing program. They're like 2 to 3 years, but you could enter a writing program to formalize your education. However, back to what I said previously, write from what you know. Just take a story that you are burning and compelled to tell and start putting something on paper and see how it shapes up. Go see a lot of theater, because then you'll get an appreciation how other playwrights have developed. So go see a lot of theater. Go see a lot of film too, because they're all stories. So go see those and then take the one that you felt most compelled to write about and start. Just get something on the paper, because you know all writing is rewriting. You start with one draft, then you go to draft two. All writing is going to be rewriting. You never, at one point you have to lock it in. Of course you will, but start with, and after you do that draft, you got that out of you, you may say, you know, I need that character. No, I don't really need that character. Well, that character could be a man. That character might be a woman. So on the second draft, then do your changes, make your changes. So you can, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect the first time out at bat. There's a story about August Wilson. And he was at a very prestigious playwriting program called the O'Neill Center in Connecticut. Yeah. And one of his plays, I forget which one it was, they had to sit down. Part of the program was that the playwrights had to sit down and read the entire work. Whatever they brought and whatever they were accepted into the program, they had to read the entire thing. Well, this famous story about, I can't think of which one it was, it took 4 hours to read. It took 4 hours to read that. So again, he started, of course, it has to be shorter than that. But just because he started with, usually when you first start writing, you put in everything. You put everything in the story. And then you begin to go, well, you know, I don't really need that. It's the most important. So just start writing. And if you want formalized training, look for a program in a workshop. It doesn't have to be an education, a degree. But look for what writing programs or platforms they may have in your community.
So when in doing that, Greg, tell us a little bit about what drives you? I mean, when you get up in the morning, you know, LA, we're bright and sunny and everything, you know, I know you have to have a certain amount of discipline. Anyone does that has a serious talent and they're serious about putting time into it. What drives you to get up and direct, and especially doing live theater versus, I mean, do you want to do film and theater? Do you want to do both?
I started out in theater. That's why I was trained. When I started training in New York, I started out as an actor and I segued into directing. But believe me, I would want to do film, television. It's just that I think because my foundation is theater and I get a lot of work in theater, I naturally gravitate toward it. But in theater is the one medium that you have an immediate response from your audience, which is unlike features and unlike television. I mean, actors can feel on stage when the audience is interested, when they're losing their interest, when they're vocal. There's something about an alchemy that goes on between an audience and the actor that is, and it's never the same. The thing about theater, every night, it's going to be a little different. It's not going to be exactly the same. So those elements really fascinate me. I can feel
audience shifts too, don't they? Doesn't the audience shift every night? The audience shifts like the same people don't come.
Every night there's always a new audience and they're going to react. They're entitled to their reaction. Some are very, very quiet. I'm thinking, oh my God, they hate to play. And then by the end of it, they're up on their feet giving a rousing standing ovation. They just happen to be quiet. They were just a quiet. Some talk back to them. Some will talk with the, the story. They'll get it. Oh my God. And you'll verbally hear them react to what's going on. So there's something special about theater. It's almost interactive in that you can feel, not even verbally, but you can feel the level of interest and investment from the audience. And I love that. I love that. It's a moment that you're creating that'll never be the same, and you move on to the next moment.
And then what are you doing while, when you say you become unnecessary or, you know, whatever, what are you doing? Are you planning your next play? Are you writing?
Usually I'm planning the next one. Usually I'm planning.
What does that involve, Greg? I want to know your process.
Sometimes theaters come to me and they have a project. They'll offer me a project. Hey, we're planning to mount this play. We'd love you to direct it. Sometimes I might pitch to a theater, a play that I'm interested in doing. So I might go to a theater company and pitch that. I also work as an actor. So I have a manager. Yes. Agent. So I'm auditioning all the time. I'm auditioning all the time. Sometimes I'm going out to shoot television and to shoot film. So it's pretty active. Those downtimes are that I'm not directing something is meaning I'm either looking for work or I've got something on the planning boards that I'm looking to start.
So it's, but you're always busy. You're always busy.
I'm blessed that usually I can go from one project to the other. And that's an accomplishment that I can do that. I'm very blessed and I feel very special about that.
Now, you said when we started off, you talked a little bit about, you know, the play and why you were happy that you had a foundation in New York, but you love living in L.A.
Yes.
I notice that when they do things, you know, because I get stuff from New York and I know what production is going there as well as here. What is the differences in how you would involve or people in a director or talent would involve a production, wrap themselves a production around in New York versus in LA because of the region, because of how New York is set up as a theater community, you know, because LA is not a theater community like that. It's building and it has come from going into that, but it is not like that. I've been here a long time and trust me, it's coming slowly getting there. What's the difference? And do you think that'll be in the future? Do you think it will be more people coming into LA for theater?
Seen so many playwrights, directors, and actors come out here. Well, traditionally, historically, a lot of, because of Broadway, much of theater was based in New York. But since I've moved out here, so many actors, directors, playwrights that I know have also moved out here. So they're bringing their theater habit with them. So right now, LA has a very vibrant and alive theater scene. That might not have been when I first got here, but now because so many people have come here from Chicago, from New York, which are traditionally theater towns, so many have moved out here, the weather, you name it, whatever, a television project brought them out. But now I can name you 10, 20, 30 theater, functioning theaters. They may not all be big, but they're doing terrific work out here in Los Angeles.
They are, and they're surviving, aren't they?
Absolutely. So it's not only, so at one point it was almost snobbish and elitist to say New York was the only theater town that was serious.
Yeah, and Chicago. It was.
But now you can't say that anymore. There's so many actors, directors, playwrights, technicians, design people who come out here and work. So we can equal New York in terms of the type of plays, the type of artists, creative artists that are working out in Los Angeles now.
Yeah, and I needed you to say that because a lot of people will read the newspaper. Oh, people are exiting L.A. and California because they can't find work and. You know, that kind of news. And we need people to say that's not true all the way. People may be exiting, but at the same time they're exiting, people are also coming in.
That's right.
You know, coming in and laying groundwork and making this. Because I have been in L.A. a while. And L.A. is one of those cities that if you get in here and you just depend on Hollywood, which is on Hollywood Boulevard and Sunset, you're not going to get a good grip of what's here. But I'm telling you, when you really dive into this city, as big as it is, you find theater companies like A Noise Within. You find those theater companies that you're talking about where some of your prestigious actors and people like that hang out.
Absolutely.
Knowing this to you.
Because they brought the habit of going to do theater out here with them. So they find places where they can do theater. So it's definitely, we don't have to bow down to any spot when it comes to doing theater in Los Angeles. It's very alive. It's very, very vibrant right now in theater. And of course, the pandemic threw everything upside down. I mean, Broadway even closed and there was no theater because you couldn't be in the building for like over 2 years. So that threw everything upside down. The pandemic hurt the arts, not just theater, but of course, music, symphony, and dance. But now we're coming back. I must say they haven't quite returned from pre-pandemic levels, the size of the audience, but
the house is full. The house is full.
People are coming back to it. People still have a need for theater. Excuse me. And they're coming back. They are coming back.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. It's going to run, piano lessons is going to run from October 19, which has already started, but it's going to run to November 10th. I feel that they probably extended. Is there room to extend the play or no?
No, there's not.
Oh, man.
They've got to close on November 10th because they've got to bring the next play in.
You people out there, you better get in there and see it, man. If you haven't
come
seen
it by
it.
November 10th, because after November 10th, I guarantee you it will be an empty, bare stage as they build and install the next play, which is A Christmas Carol. It will be gone.
Yeah, because it's the holiday. Where is it going from here? Do you know?
Our production will end, and then we'll start planning for the next one. It's not going to travel.
It's not going to travel.
Nope.
Why do some of them travel and others don't? Why do some of the productions travel and others don't?
Well, if there was an interest from a producer in New York, I mean, there might be an interest from a producer in New York or Chicago that wants to There might be interest in terms of wanting to bring it to New York or to Chicago. There might be interest, or it might be a bus and truck company that is traveling a bunch all over the United States. But that's why some have another life. But in a company like ours that has five plays in the season, it's got to close. We have to make room for the next production.
But that's a lot. Five plays in a season. That's a lot.
That's why we have to go bye-bye, no matter how popular you are. Now, we find if they have a slot in the future, they may want to bring it back. But quite frankly, again, other than a bus and truck touring national tour, and that's mostly Broadway, productions don't always move unless there's a producer somewhere who saw your production who specifically wants it in her or his theater. Then it might transfer from Los Angeles to wherever it might be.
So that's how it works. Do you feel, because I've always felt this, do you remember the old Chitlin Circuit? You know, and for those of you out there that have done some research, you would know what the Chitlin Circuit is, no matter what your age or culture or background. You know, but what I want to say is that I don't understand why theater can't operate the same way. Why they can't take an August Wilson play like Piano Lessons, put it in here in LA, and then run it into San Francisco, and then run it into the next town, and then run. I mean, why is that not happening? I don't understand.
I mean, part of the question is economics. It costs an enormous amount to move a production. Unless you're Broadway, which is for profit, most of these theaters are called nonprofit theaters. The money they make, they have to cycle back into the theater. So when you're a nonprofit, a 501c3, to be technically for your listeners, a 501c3, a nonprofit, passing the Playhouse, Mark Taper Forum, they're all nonprofits. So any money made has to go back into the organization. Broadway is profit. I mean, they make money and they pay off their backers, their producers. Right. But it's an enormous amount of money to move a production from one place to another, much less one city, much less a whole tour of cities. You got the hotel rooms and trucking the shipping the equipment. It's very, very, and a place like A Noise Within just doesn't have that kind of funds to move a play.
And so are the funds to, because we want theater to stay around. So it's really important that people are hearing you explain what happens so that, you know, if there's support out there and things like that, people can understand why that's necessary. But in terms of the entire production, does the funding come from outside sources, your own budget, the budget of the theater company? Does everybody combine everything to make the production happen? Or you say
it's a number of sources. Some of them are grants. Some of them are grants from institutions. Some of them are audience and ticket sales account for just a little bit. A lot of it is also grants from the county, from the state, nationally. They're always applying for funding from other places, always applying for funding. Okay. So it's a combination of all those sources that keep a theater like A Noise Within alive. And then they're giving grants and they win awards. So they're given funds for something specific. But that's what keeps a nonprofit going. Just the ticket sales are only a small portion of keeping that company running year round. They have to go to other sources. And that's a lot of grants and things like that. Grants and things like that, that they are applying to all the time. Most theaters have a grant writer. They just have someone on staff that does.
Who would know that? I didn't know. What is the difference between the grant writer and the underwriter, or is that necessary?
A grant writer specifically, like the organization must say, we want this company to take this play and somehow bring in children or bring in young people or high school. They have to tail themselves to what does the grant want, and can we do this kind of thing without? Can we do what they want with the resources we have? So the grant writer is tailoring how a noise within, for example, can meet their specific circumstances.
Got
and
this it.
Is just a lot of writing involved. Oh my goodness, usually there's pages and pages and pages and pages of that the grantor wants to know. They want to see it on paper before they decide, yes, we should award this amount. We should award this amount to a noise within. So a lot of theater companies now, if they're lucky, have a grant writer who goes after those grants, because it could be the difference between life and death, being able to get grants to stay, keep your doors open, pay the bills.
Wow. But now during the pandemic, a noise within, were you still doing any kind of production at all?
Yes, they did some online work. They recorded some things to be online, so we didn't have an audience in or anything like that.
But you had a web on.
Yes. They did some things online. They offered their audiences, so they didn't just die and shrivel up and go away. They still, an audience still craved to see theater. They wanted to see it. So what they did cleverly, they taped things that were on stage. They brought camera equipment in. They brought camera equipment in, and they would put it on a platform like StreamYard. They would put it on a platform, and people could tune in to see what was what they were offering. So they stayed alive. They stayed alive, and they kept a presence in the artistic community. But of course, everybody wanted to get back in the brick and mortar theater. Everyone wanted to go back inside, but that took some time so they could figure out, how do we go back inside and stay? A lot of companies changed their filtration systems. One of the way they drew people back by using
it. Wow. See, no, that is so important in knowing that. So they had to.
Well, yeah, because people feel comfortable. People don't want to come in the theater thinking they might contract COVID. So there's a special HVAC system, which of course filters the air out and how it works. So a lot of companies invested a lot of money in making sure the air, this filtration system, was such that it would keep the patrons safe. And that was a huge cost, but they had to, because people don't want to come back to a space and not feel that they're protected.
Mm-hmm.
And for
go ahead.
In the beginning, people had to wear masks. Now they don't. But in the beginning, remember the mask phase?
Yes, of course.
When they opened the theater again, if you came in, you had to wear a mask.
Now they don't have any of those restrictions at all anymore.
No.
Everybody's back to normal.
It's volunteer now. It's entirely up to you. The city and the state doesn't demand that you wear a mask when you go to the theater. At one point, you had to.
Do we have to show any kind of thing saying that we have been vaccinated, or none of that is
anymore? Not anymore.
Wow.
Not anymore. Things have changed so much now that we have the vaccine and we have
we got help. Yeah,
they have so much now that no, you don't have. It's entirely up to you whether you. Of course, they recommend if you're not feeling well, don't come to the theater. You know, that's common sense. But no, a lot of those restrictions, state and county wise, have gone bye bye.
And then the last thing before we have to go, people, because we've got to be out here at 10 up. But I want to say, first of all, I want to know your tags, your social media tags.
Yes.
Before I say that. And then I want to ask you one last question.
Of course.
What is it that keeps you coming back home to the theater? What keeps you coming back, Greg T. Daniel, double G Greg? What keeps you coming back to the theater?
That's a good question. You know, it's my love of stories. It's my belief that theater can heal. It's my belief that theater can build bridges, can create community, can give us an insight of who we are, not as just individuals, but as a community, as a country. Theater has a mighty power in it. When you can look at someone's story that's not even your story, and you can feel empathy for them, you can cry for them, you can laugh for them. That's a mighty power that human beings have, the gift of empathy. And theater relies on that. So it always keeps it fresh. We come out of ourselves and we extend ourselves and are willing to be vulnerable when we see a story and hear stories. It makes us feel better. We want to reach out to that story. So there's something so noble about the ability to tell stories and transform people's lives. Something very, very noble about that. So yeah, that's why I keep doing it.
That's it. That's that passion that keeps him coming back for more. So, hey, we're going to get out of here, you guys. We're going to ask Greg to announce his social media tags.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Facebook, IG, Snapchat, LinkedIn. Threads now? Any of those? Let us know where we can get you go.
Okay, I'm taking a look right now. I am on Twitter, I am at real Greg Daniel. And as she was saying earlier, Osiris, you have to spell it G-R-E-double-G. So Twitter @real Greg Daniel. Facebook @actor Greg Daniel. And on IG, it's official Greg Daniel. No spaces. Official Greg Daniel on Instagram, at Real Greg Daniel on Twitter, and at Actor Greg Daniel on Facebook. No spaces. Just put them out, and you'll get all my stuff.
That's what we're talking about. And then Noise Within Productions website?
Noisewithin.org. Go to noisewithin.org. They have a beautiful website with photos of their productions from past, present, and the ones they're going to do. So noisewithin.org, you can find out all that information and about the show currently running, which is The Piano Lesson.
The Piano Lesson. So you have until November 10th, people. I'm telling you again.
You do.
I looked at the, it was standing room only. It was a lot of people trying to get in to see the play. So I would advise you to, it's the holiday season. I would advise you to do your proper due and go down there and check it out. This man has done an incredible job of directing, you know, an incredible job at bringing August Wilson. I'm sure he's around there up in the ethers being proud.
He is.
I did that. You know, I'm sure.
In his spirit. So please, you have at least 2.5 weeks left. So please come out, bring the family, see the Piano Lesson.
Yeah, and 2.5 weeks is going by fast these days.
I know. The whole year is going by fast for me.
It's going by fast. So anyway,
it's a good couple of hours to spend, I guarantee it.
All right. And don't forget about me, Osiris Munir on IG, Osiris, O-S-I-R-I-S, underscore M-U-N-I-R, Munir, the painter, underscore the painter.
Okay.
And my website is expressinabstract.net. Don't forget, I am a painter and a writer and an author, I might add. And also, the blog is Ankh, A-N-K-H, like the Egyptian Ankh Entertainment, the word one.net. And we're going to see you next time. We have a few more, like 4 minutes. Greg, do you want to say any last words before we go?
Just keep supporting the arts. It needs it now more than ever. It needs it now because we're still struggling to come back from the pandemic. So not just theater, but whether it's classical music, whether it's art, whether it's museums, buy a subscription, buy a membership. Well, you pay that for your coffee in a couple of weeks. Buy a membership, but it could keep that institution going all year long. So get involved. Go ahead and support those things in your community that represent the arts.
That's right. And that's very important to do that. So we want to say once again, thank you, Greg, for coming into the studio here in LA Talk Radio at 15 minutes. The show now, I want people to know we're 15 minutes, but we went from a 15 minute format to a longer format because I wanted to talk more to guests like Greg that they could really get to have a chance to talk about. So even though it says 15 minutes and that's our brand, we talk more than that. We like to talk around 50. So I'm going to see you guys the next time. Thanks, Greg, and all of you out
thank
there.
You.
Please come out and support the arts. I can't say that enough. Support this man, support music. Oh, Greg, one more quick question.
Yes.
Where does the music come from the theater? Who brings that in? Is that directed to you?
We hired a composer. There's a couple of songs in here. So we hired a wonderful woman singer. Her name is Marie Tree Garrett. And I've worked with her before. So we hired her to come in and compose some live music for this show.
And unlike film where they add, I think they add the music after they've done everything in film. Is theater the same or no?
No, as she comes up with it, we rehearse with it. We begin introducing it on stage.
And so
it follows the
cast from the beginning to the end.
It's part of the rehearsal process. Part of the rehearsal. As soon as she's got something, we begin to weave it into the rehearsal process. So, yeah, we don't wait till afterwards and put it in post. We have no post. We have to do it before we open officially.
Everything's live. Everything is right.
Yeah, you better believe it. Keeps it real.
Okay, everybody, don't forget next week, come back, see me. We'll talk about and have a nice guest next week. Somebody interesting other than, you know, LA Talk Radio. Don't forget to come back and support the station, support us, support Greg, his production, The Noise Within. They are doing a fine job out there in Pasadena. Don't forget, it is in Pasadena. And Pasadena is a really cool hotspot, you guys. It gets ignored a little, but there's a lot going on in Pasadena. So don't forget to go out there and support Piano Lessons, and don't forget to take some piano lessons if you got a piano.
Sure, play a musical instrument. Never too late to start learning a musical instrument.
Never too late to start.
Never too late.
All right.
Bye.
It's been another bye. Bye, Greg. Bye, Greg. Hey, bye, Greg. So bye.
Bye.
You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.